Blog Talk Radio.
WPR Rebuttal is on the air.
Welcome to WPR Rebuttal. I'm your host, Senator JPO. And I just want to make sure that in the background you might hear some gunshots and some dogs barking. It's because living in the country, it's the beginning of hunting season, and accordingly, it's not like I have a soundproof studio, so there might be some background noise, but I'll get through it. Just like sometimes the conference line cuts out because I'm calling in on a cell phone to do a show, and again, if that happens, I'll just call right back in. Okay, so the topic today is the impact of demography upon UW-Milwaukee's enrollment. Because last week, I was celebrating the loss of 900 students, the loss of $6.5 million in revenue for my alma mater, the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. And the reason why I was rejoicing is because it is proving to UWM that it needs to prove that it is providing better value to most of its graduates than otherwise. Because right now, there is no numerical proof. And I've been arguing that potential students are taking it to heart and they're avoiding UW-Milwaukee. And some other students might have transferred out, but really there's no data from UWM as to how many actually transferred away and which campuses. That's not really monitored, but it should be monitored, as well as how last year's graduates from May 2015, how they've been faring over a year in the labor market as full-time contenders, as opposed to just newly minted grads who had been full-time students and hence not counted by the Census Bureau and not counted by the unemployment insurance law, not counted by either metric as actually being in the full-time workforce. And hence, my argument is that until UW-Milwaukee quantifies the recent failure or successes of the actual cohort of the graduates from a whole year in the past and how those graduates are doing in the present, well, they just will not have a believable bill of goods. It just won't have the credibility to cynical higher education skeptics, which include an increasing share of the millennials. Now, a lot of the older millennials already earned their degrees, but the younger ones are seeing acquaintances and siblings and just the whole coverage, such as on my radio show, WPR Rebuttal, internet radio, that is, and such as in many blog posts from people who've been there and done that, the whole college experience and how they were disappointed and dissatisfied about where the college experience took them in the subsequent contentions for success in the labor market. So how does Wisconsin's demography play into this? Well, first off, I posted in a LinkedIn group particular to my alma mater, UW-Milwaukee alumni group, and that's on LinkedIn. And after I had posted about UW-Milwaukee's loss of 900 students in 1 year, I delved into the data and found that, well, historically, that tends to happen once a decade. And the only reason it did not happen last decade is because the enrollment had been stagnant. So there had not been sufficient spike of enrollment in the so-called aughts, as they were called, from like 2000 through 2010. Enrollment had been relatively stagnant such that there was not as big of a plunge in enrollment just because there had not been an enrollment bubble as there had been in the 1980s, as there had been in the 1990s. And again, this particular UW-Milwaukee, well, I would have to examine these enrollment figures for every single campus. which I guess I could do within a span of a year. It'd be a hellacious task, though, because then by the time I'm done with a certain proportion of those campuses, then you have another year's worth of data to add. But I think cumulatively, I could just have like this master database in like Microsoft Access or something, and just this master database of enrollment history for all these campuses, and then match it to tables of demography for every state. And that would be like the basis of my book, essentially, because I had been trying to write a book about higher education skepticism, and I had been disappointed with just mostly anecdotal evidence and like secondary sources from like the Federal Reserve and other stuff that wasn't at the campus level. But now I believe that this idea, the fact that I am seeing enrollment dip at UM-Milwaukee, as well as in other colleges too, like it was recently publicized that smaller colleges in Maryland are also losing enrollment. They're losing students at the graduate and the undergraduate level. And that's true for not only for my alma mater, but also for other universities that are in lower income areas. And it's just they can no longer attract as many students because their whole appeal for a lot of these local yokels, as they're pejoratively called, a lot of the appeal for a university is the earnings potential. And without proof of that earnings potential being more or less evenly distributed, such that they feel they have a credible shot at actually launching a career instead of ending up as, let's say, a barista with a bachelor's or a cheese packer with a master's degree and all these other horror stories that are true, mind you, these true horror stories they've been hearing from various sources. Well, it's up to the university. The onus is upon the administrators to prove they have a credible, saleable bill of goods and not just a bunch of lies. And that's why I've pejoratively referred to Wisconsin Promise as a Wisconsin lie, because it says nothing about that. And pardoning all the sparking, I really wish that I could get a studio somewhere else. But no, I mean, really, I just have I live in a shared house here, right? So, I mean, if I could get rid of those dogs, I would. But, again, they're not mine, so there's nothing really I can do except for just say, hey, ignore the background noise. Let's just stay attuned to the show. Okay, now, if anyone wants to call in about this issue, again, our number here at WPR Rebuttal is 929-477-3965. Again, that's 929-477-3965. Okay, so now, how do I know about Wisconsin's demography? I went to the Wisconsin Interactive Statistics on Health, which is known by the acronym WISH. Again, that's Wisconsin Interactive Statistics on Health. And, of course, that's maintained by the Department of Health Service by the state of Wisconsin. And they have a few different metrics that you can search. And one is total population. You can break it down, the population by county. You can examine the population density, the median age, and as well as the proportion of working age people to the entire population. Now, for the sake of examining enrollment, I would say that population is most immediately relevant. And here's something, okay, here's an odd thing about that WISH service, right? It's a data query tool. You can actually not query birth rate. That is a separate table. That's not a part of the query tool. I know, it's kind of odd, right? It's true. I mean, you can also look for violent death, cancer incidents, infant mortality, teen births, and all that other stuff. But really, what really matters for enrollment are immediate population, because anyone of any age. Essentially, even high schoolers can go and take college courses and be counted as part of the student enrollment as special students with permission from the high school. And, of course, people in retirement can go and take college courses, too, and be counted amongst the head count. So population generally is the most important factor for a university because that is like their potential realm of consumers. Now then, as to the birth rate, that might be a lagged predictor of eventual enrollment. But as shown by the table, the lag in Wisconsin's population does not cleanly coincide. In fact, it's really random. It's like virtually no correlation between the birth rate of Wisconsin and the timing of the peaks and valleys of UW-Milwaukee's enrollment. Because I made tables of both, and I compared differences, and I'll just put it this way. A difference in one does not align with a difference in the other. So, I mean, that was a decent idea that was proposed as a topic of examination in that alumni LinkedIn group, but really there's nothing to it. And I proved there isn't, and now I just have to finish fine-tuning or putting, rather, the data in accessible form, because I just compared the numerical data side-by-side. What I actually have to do, so that's more easily understandable by my readers, and especially by the critics in the LinkedIn group, is I have to go and create a bar chart. And then I have to overlay the bar charts. You see how I'll do it is have them side by side and just so that people can go and visually see where the differences are. And then beneath the side by side bar charts, I'll have the overlay of the two where in other words, the I'll merge them such that the bar of the representing the birth rate is next to the bar representing the population. And again, these are rates of change too. So these are not bar charts of like the raw data because that wouldn't matter in terms of comparing the rates of change, which is kind of okay, for those who are unfamiliar with why we have to use the rates of change in the comparison, because that is what the whole correlation is about. Is if one thing changes, does the other thing change in the same direction? Or is there does it change in the opposite direction? Or is there no linkage? Is there no relationship? Is there no way to predict from what change in one how the R will change? If there's no way to predict the change in the other quantity based on the change in one, then there is no relationship, right? And because you're talking about change, that being the key word in the study, then that's why we need to examine the percentages change and have those side by side on the bar chart as opposed to just the numerical quantities. Because then if you had just the raw data, then people would have to tabulate percentages themselves. Whereas if I have the raw data available in addition to the actual bar charts, then people can confirm what they're already seeing. So again, they'll be able to verify this by just going to the sources that I have cited, that being the WISH database in the state of Wisconsin for the population and birth rate figures, and the other source being the UW-Milwaukee Factbook, which has enrollment history right on one page. And they'll be able to verify and independently confirm my claims. My claim being that population continues to increase while UW-Milwaukee's enrollment fluctuates, and UWM's enrollment has dipped to what it was in the mid-1980s. So UWM's enrollment clearly is not really correlated with total population. I mean, generally speaking, for all universities, that would intuitively be a case, but it's not really the case for Yoli Milwaukee, at least not since the 1980s. Okay, you could argue that was the case for Yoli Milwaukee in the 50s, the 60s, and even into the 70s. But from the 80s onward, that's not been the case. That relationship between population and enrollment was severed because apparently, for whatever reason, I'm saying in modern times, you know, Yoli Milwaukee does not have the best reputation, but it could be that even in the 1980s, Yoli Milwaukee's reputation was already in the toilet. I mean, that's a very realistic possibility. So I'm just going to double-check the dashboard for any callers here. Okay. So, yeah, if you want to call to let your voice be heard at WPR Rebuttal, our number is 929-477-3965. And I also have a new email address, and you can send me questions and comments. That email address is feedback, F-E-E-D-B-A-C-K, at WPR-rebuttal, R-E-B-U-T-T-A-L.com. So, there's no pop relationship for Yoli Milwaukee. Not since the early 1980s. There's been no correlation. Now, as far as the birth rates and Yoli Milwaukee enrollment, well, that also has no significant correlation because the birth rate of Wisconsin has just been more or less it's just been slightly declining as the median age rises. I mean, something you have to understand about median age and birth rate is that they're negatively correlated, but neither is going to really change that much. In other words, okay, I'll put it this way. Median age is easier to change than is the birth rate. So here's a good example. Over the past 13 years, the median age in Wisconsin rose by 6 years. That's by over 18%. The difference between 33 years median age in, I want to say it was 1990. Yeah, in 1990, the median age of all Wisconsinites was 33 years. Now, in 2013, the median age of Wisconsinites was 39 years. Okay, so that's the difference of 6 years, median age, and you divide that 6 years by 33 years, and that gives us a change of more than 18%. It's almost 18.2% increase the median age of Wisconsinites in just a span of 13 years, that span being 23 years, I'm glad I caught that before I caught this podcast. But the whole point is that, yeah, I mean, within 23 years, the median age goes up by 6 years. So you have a population that half the residents are younger than 39 years and half the residents are older than 39 years. And, of course, the birth rate, which I'm still pasting the particular numbers into the spreadsheet because, hey, I have a show that goes on a particular time. I'm not going to delay a show indefinitely until I finish the spreadsheet because how do I know when I'm going to finish? I might not finish till late at night because I could always find more. I could still be styling it like the borders and the font and all that other stuff. So I'm just saying from what I found, neither the birth rate nor the median age is really correspondent with UAM's enrollment. I mean, median age is like the population. In Wisconsin, median age and population have been consistently creeping up, but UAM's enrollment fluctuates. So demography is not really as impactful for Yoli Milwaukee as one might think. So, okay, I covered that issue. What else? I guess a grab bag of topics here. Just going to my file. Okay. So, I know. Okay, so from a few weeks ago, there is this WPR claim, okay, and I'm the rebuttal of the WPR, but Wisconsin Public Radio had a show around September 21st, and it was apparently about anti-intellectualism. And some problems that I found with that article is that the professors and the authors do not cite their sources. I mean, you're supposed to, like, have a book, but really, they just want to sell a book, and I'm not going to help them sell it, so I won't even mention it. But in the article itself, there is no source cited as to a study or anything like that. And another thing is they would have to cite more than one study. They'd have to do what is known as a meta-analysis. They would have to arrive at a beta coefficient in order to actually have enough evidence to say, well, people are reading more books, or people are reading fewer books, or people are using more library sources, or people are using fewer library sources. And again, they presume that propensity to read is like a proxy for so-called intellectualism or anti-intellectualism. And it's just one of those things where they do not argue that declining college enrollment at places such as UWM, they do not argue that's a sign of anti-intellectualism, which they shouldn't, because really a lot of intelligent people might conclude that UW-Milwaukee is not the place for them. Many intelligent people might wisely decide to just go and take some gap years and then maybe go to a vocational technical college instead of like a liberal arts university. And that's more intelligent. A lot of these people who go and they presume that they just do all the right things and earn their degree, then a career will follow. Of course, that has been increasingly exposed. It's not really true. And that's why some people call Wisconsin Promise a Wisconsin lie. And that's just something that WPR tries to portray as like higher education being a good in itself, but WPR rebuttal is proving that no, higher education is not necessarily a social good in itself. It can be wasteful, and it can really misdirect people's energies. And there's a quotation here. Okay, so aspirations when thwarted can be a potent, spiteful force. And that's what this Times writer, Somini Sengupta, I suppose it's like an American immigrant from India, but that was written more about the rise of the middle class in India and how it's unable to grow as quickly as a lot of policymakers and a lot of the citizens want, because there just aren't enough middle class jobs in India. Now, a lot of people have been saying that about Wisconsin, where we're kind of a Reconstruction era economy, where we're still heavy on agriculture and white industry. But the whole point is that the universities keep on trying to draw students in, and really the students would not be in debt if they would just not go to university. And there wouldn't be a need to have more middle-class jobs if you didn't have all these students putting themselves in the situation where they're, I suppose, allocating at least 4 years of their finite lives. In my case, it was 8 years. But they're just allocating so much time and so much tuition, and in some cases, tiers. So that would be three T's, time, tiers, and tuition, towards earning this academic credential. And a lot of cases, it gets them nowhere. So, of course, their thwarted aspirations can be a potent political force, and that's why we see not only the voting with their feet as consumers by avoiding UW-Milwaukee, but we also see them voting for politicians who will go and reduce the funding to the universities, because it's a means of teaching and chastising those universities into understanding there needs to be a better career development safety net that even the least likely to succeed amongst the students admitted, or else why admit the students, right? Amongst all the students admitted, there needs to be some type of assurance that they, yes, they will be allowed to enter some type of white-collar career within a year of degree conferral. And again, it needs to be quantified to see the extent of the problem, because the problem is as large as I suspect it is, and it's time to cap enrollment so that you can better serve the students you do admit. And yeah, being pickier will mean you'll lose tuition money, but guess what? That's called the market. That's called capitalism. That's called adapting to conditions. And a lot of universities will find they have to do that. So I'm going to wrap up this show. I just want to cover our next show. Will air Friday, October 1st. And again, I'm just going to continue putting together my notes and the charts, the pivot tables and all that. Like, I will have the spreadsheet of demography data and UNWAUKEE's enrollment history. I'll have all that available on the webpage. And I'll also publish it to LinkedIn, too, because I have a lot of, I guess, readers. Yeah, a lot of LinkedIn readers from the UNWAUKEE alumni group who have read the thread, and I have at least a half dozen who actually responded with some questions, and my findings on the demography answer a lot of those questions. But again, there are things too, like, my goal is to show that this is not a fluke for UNWAUKEE. This is actually attributable as to a specific distaste in the public mind against UWM, despite demography going towards the what would appear to favor UWM-Milwaukee. Well, not even a favorable demography can save UWM. That's the bottom line, and that's the whole message of this episode. So, again, next show will be Friday, October 7th at 1:30. And if there's someone, like a potential caller, who wants to actually get on here and speak with me in front of our listening audience, then, again, you can email me at feedback@wpr-rebel.com. And you can say, like, if you really have to go and speak at a different time, then we could potentially arrange a show to air at a different time. But, again, that has to be negotiated, and it's definitely not a given. So, again, any comments, questions, or just anything at all in terms of, like, whether this schedule is fitting your schedules that you feel like you're free to call in, just email at feedback@wpr-rebel.com. Senator JPO signing off. Later.